The power of words, especially when those words are coming from the guardians of interest rates in Washington. I'm David Brancaccio in New York. The key stock index in Hong Kong fell 1.5% today. European stocks are also on the wane. The DAX index in Germany is down 0.9% now. The FTSE in London down 1%. This after the U.S. Federal Reserve yesterday issued a statement that contained the following words. Quote, "A majority of participants noted that a stronger outlook for economic growth raised the likelihood that further gradual policy firming would be appropriate." Translation, "We think the U.S. economy has strengthened to the point that we might want to move interest rates even higher than we thought to slow things down a bit." U.S. markets were trading merrily along until that statement hit the wires yesterday afternoon. Ben Kumar at Seven Investment Management in London was looking at the same bulletins.
Well, it was quite hard not to notice it. You know, the European markets were closed, but it was very evident that the U.S. market reacted. I think the focus on interest rates has increased again. You know, we spent maybe the last 2 years not really worrying about what the Fed said. Now, though, it's of the kind of quantum where we're looking at multiple interest rates within a year, multiple interest rate rises, which is something the market hasn't had to deal with for over a decade.
It's also a bit of a reminder about the story at hand here. You know, the Fed comes out with a statement. It spooks the market. The market has been ripe for spooking this month of February 2018.
It has. The volatility, the scale of market moves we've seen is approximately normal, right? You're meant to get, if you look back over history, about 50 days a year where the market moves up or down by more than 1%. And in 2017, we only saw 8 days where that happened. So far, we're about the average run rate. It just feels a little strange because we haven't seen it over the past 12 months.
Yes, volatility back. Ben Kumar at Seven Investment Management in London. Always good to talk to you.
Thanks.
Some more numbers this morning. After the Dow ended down 166 points, 0.7%, and the S&P lost 0.8% yesterday, U.S. stock index futures are mixed this morning. A key guide to interest rates in the U.S., the yield on the government's 10-year note is at 2.93%. Now to a stark portrayal of hunger in America. In 99% of U.S. counties, virtually the entire country, the Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, SNAP, is not fully meeting the needs of the people who rely on it. That's from a study out this morning from the Urban Institute, which finds that depending on where, the gap can be a little or a lot. SNAP was never intended to provide a family's entire food budget, but in many households, that's the role it's taken on. Marketplace's Erica Barris reports.
4 out of 10 households are unable to provide nutritious meals despite receiving maximum SNAP benefits, according to the study. Chris Douglas runs the food bank in Westmoreland County in rural Pennsylvania. Many of the people he sees are also getting SNAP.
Most of the people that we service are not sitting at home jobless. They work multiple jobs. They just don't make enough money to support their families.
Triada Stampus works with New York City's food bank. She says the program hasn't kept up with where and how people live.
The United States of the 1960s is not the United States of the, 20-teens.
Ellen Bollinger is with the Food Research and Action Center, an advocacy group. She says efforts to modernize SNAP are in the works, like an online ordering program.
Things that can be done that improve access to benefits, where and how people are able to use their benefits, certainly can be improvements.
Bringing benefits more in line with where people live has also been proposed. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
For some people with disabilities, getting dressed is often a daily challenge. Now, some big brands, including Target, Tommy Hilfiger, and Zappos, have come out with what's called adaptive clothing lines. Kristen Schwab looks into this growing market.
Shion Horn's shoe rack in her Manhattan apartment is stacked with identical pairs of Mary Janes.
I have a white pair. I have like a light green pair. I have a cherry oak pair.
Mary Janes aren't exactly Horn's shoe of choice. She's a disability rights advocate and has cerebral palsy, which affects her muscle coordination. So she uses poles to walk, and she's hard on her shoes. Sneakers hold up, but she wants to wear something nicer sometimes. The only shoes she deems fashionable and durable? These discounted Mary Janes that she hunts for on eBay.
But, you know, I've been wearing these on rotate for probably 5 years. So there's a point at which you're like, you know, it'd be nice to change it up.
Changing it up could get easier. Zappos recently added adaptive and orthotic-friendly shoes to its inventory. And adaptive clothing with features like magnetic closures and one-handed zippers is growing among big brands. Julie Gugamos, head of product design at Target, says it took consulting disability nonprofits and customers and employees to get their adaptive lines right.
You don't know what others need until you really build that empathy.
Functionality is important, but so is looking fashionable. It's why Target hasn't made adaptive lines, but adaptive versions of bestsellers. And there's money here from a customer base that's underserved. The U.S. Census says people with disabilities make up at least 19% of the U.S. population. Stacey Bingle, a consumer trends analyst at Mintel, says the market doesn't stop there.
It's not just that consumer who's buying the adaptive clothing. It's all consumers sort of appreciating this extra step that retailers are taking.
Horn says she's excited to see people with disabilities in fashion ads. She hopes companies will go beyond basics like t-shirts and jeans.
We want to reflect our personalities, not just have something that fits.
So brands, if you're listening, Horn has a plea. Make more shoes to replace those tired Mary Janes. In New York, I'm Kristen Schwab for Marketplace.
And this morning's Marketplace Teachable Moment is about cyber attacks and insider trading. And if you think about it, right, there's usually a period between when a company discovers an attack or a computer security breach and is putting out the fire and the time this is disclosed to the public. According to new guidelines from the Securities and Exchange Commission this week, employees who sell their stock when the rest of the world doesn't know about the cyber mess could be committing insider trading. That can end unhappily if regulators find out. The SEC is suggesting companies bar their employees from buying and selling until the hack is publicized. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. It's from APM. American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.